Here.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Anderson?
Yes.
Trustee Hill?
Here.
Can we verify that a meeting notice was sent?
Yes, they were.
Can we have a motion with regard to the minutes of the last meeting?
Motion that the minutes be accepted.
Second.
Trustee Tolliver?
Yes.
Trustee Samuels?
Yes.
Trustee Rozier?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Anderson?
Yes.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Our first item on the agenda is from Mr. Meeks. Morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, trustees. First thing I'd like to do is, for the record, Glenn Meeks, Vice President for Administration and Finance, and with me this morning is Ted Lannon, our controller. The first thing that I'd like to do is to have Ted go over the preliminary financials with giving some of the variance analysis. There should be copies that you already would have received in your packet. And after he finishes with that, I'd like to talk a little bit about our cash position and a couple of other items. I'd like to turn it over to Ted.
Good morning again, trustees. Ted Lannon, Director of Accounting Controller. So in your packet, page one of the finance packet shows the balance sheet for June 30th for the 2 years. So if you would look at that, please. I'll just comment on some of the major items here. So the first is the cash, which you see it's decreased by $2.3 million, and that's primarily due to the receivable from the state. Also, the state and other receivables, then obviously there's an increase in the state receivables, again, primarily because of the slow payment from the state. Moving down to investment in plant, these are preliminary financials, as Mr. Meek stated. I did factor in an estimated $6 million in depreciation just for comparability to last year's numbers. So based on that, there is an increase of $2.6 million in net fixed assets. Again, that may change as we complete our audited financials. Then moving down to accounts payable in the liabilities section, we have a decrease of $4.6 million in that. Most of $1.2 million of that is related to the grants payable, and the other $3.4 is for other payables. And the only other item I would comment here is on the bonds payable, and that the $930,000 simply reflects the normal schedule of pay down of the bond principal. So then if we move to page two in your packet, the preliminary combined statement of revenues and expenditures. The first item to look at there is the appropriations on the first line. We see that it's down approximately $3 million. The obvious comparison is we had some stimulus funds that the state passed through to us in FY10 for $3.4 million. We don't have that in FY11, so that went away. The student tuition and fees, again, due to the preliminary nature, there is an allowance that we're required to make against the tuition, which is not reflected here yet because we're still working on the financials. So the increase in tuition really looks, I would expect that to decrease by approximately $11 million once we do that entry related to the allowance. But it was due to the increases that we put through in tuition. That would be plus the, so primarily the increases in the tuition. Then on the grants and contracts, we see a $7 million increase there over last year. That's primarily due to an increase in the Pell Awards this year. Now, the Pell was, I'm remembering something in the neighborhood of $13 million higher in FY11 than from last year. And another item is the textbook learning materials portion of the Ghana grant. So there's a $1.6 million increase related to that. The indirect cost reimbursements on the next line, this $1.5 million higher, that's primarily due to the increase in grants revenue overall. So on the line above, we saw a $7 million increase in grants revenue. So the indirect cost, which is directly driven by the grants revenue, also increased. The on behalf payments for the state, from the state, there's a $2 million increase there, and it appears to be the retirement expense. We do have more people who have retired, so the whole benefit expense is an item that we know tends to trend upwards. And so that and the combination of that and some more people retiring would drive that increase. If we look at other income there, the last line item in the revenues, we did have an increase in the CRCP, the Chicago Regional College Program, of about $734,000, and one of the athletics line items shows an increase of $440,000. So that's what gets us to this $1,068,000 increase on that line item. Then down in the expenditures, I would ask you to look at instruction. I looked at the natural expense version of that item, meaning salaries and other kinds of expenses. These are functional expenses that are indicated on the statement. So there's a higher expense in the faculty salary line item of a little over $1 million. The group insurance is higher by about $1.5 million. And then awards to students, that's another item that's higher in the instruction line item. In the operation and maintenance of plant here, we had a higher expenditure for the CDB, the projects from the Capital Development Board. Over last year, there's a $2.5 million increase in that. And another area in there is the local income. There's an increase of $3.2 million in that. So then moving down to student services, one difference in presentation over last year is the Pell is listed in student services, that functional line expense item. In FY11, it was not in FY10. So that's driving most of that increase. So that would, overall, at the bottom line here, overall, there's just a slight decrease. But again, I would say the numbers are preliminary at this point. Do we have any questions?
Thank you, Ted. Thank you. I'd like to segue. Ted's presentation gives us a good segue into our cash position, you know, as we look at it. One of the things on his statement I want to bring out to you, when he looked at the very first page, when the balance sheet, where it looked at the receivables, accounts receivables, well, state and other receivables, that $17.4 million at the end of June. Let's go to that. What we've done is, as of, when is this? This is, as of the end of September, and I'll get up to do this.
As of the end of September, we're showing now that the state owed us, instead of the 17, whatever that is there, they owed us almost $16 million. The state still owed us from FY11. Ted's balance sheet reflects $17 million. They did pay us this fiscal year for one of the payrolls last fiscal year. We're in contact with the state now to find out when are they planning on paying us or insisting that they pay us the balance of what they owe us in the current fiscal year. And of course, the reason why that's important, or before I get to this, one other thing too, is that the ISAC and the MAP dollars that we received from the state, we've already, for FY2012, we've already provided the funds to the students, and so the state currently owes us almost $4 million in ISAC and MAP dollars currently. If you add that on top of what they owe us from last fiscal year, we're looking at $19.6 million that the state currently owes Chicago State University. Now, that represents that you have to remember, the state, our state budget, appropriated budget is only a little less than $40 million, $39 million. And so this represents over half of our current state budget that's currently being owed by the state to Chicago State University. And again, we're talking to the state, finding out when are the projections, when are we receiving this. We reached out to the governor's office. We've done the things that we traditionally do. Always, the state has come through for us when we've run into a crisis situation, but we still have to provide them, our schedule on when we plan on receiving those dollars in order to fund payrolls, to pay our vendors, et cetera. So if you go up to the top of our cash report, and we projected this out every 2 weeks, as we always have, until the end of November. Current money that we have in the bank, total cash that we have in all banks, currently right now, $16.7 million. This is the breakdown per bank, and we've got some restricted dollars that are in there of about 3.6. So total net cash that's available to us as of this report, which is September 22nd, is about $12 million. Remember, every payroll is roughly about $3 million. So if we don't get any other money, we can operate for at least, if we just pay our employees and don't pay our bills, 4 months. But this is what we're projecting. If you go down to the bottom line. The bottom line, if the state continues to pay us, and they've been paying us right now, they have been reimbursing us for the current fiscal year for our payrolls that we're currently having. So they have been doing that. And so if they continue to do that, by the end of September, by the end of November that we projected out, we're looking at our cash position of about $4 million. We'll have $4 million. If they don't, we're looking at a deficit of $2 million. So currently, the payrolls that they've reimbursed us for, they've reimbursed us so far for all the payrolls that we've had in the current fiscal year. But if they stray from that, we look like we're starting to run into problems at the end of November. So we're watching that very carefully to make sure that that doesn't happen, that they continue to reimburse us. And we'll probably have the next time we have another board meeting, I'd like to give another update of the cash, just so that it won't be as in-depth as this probably, but I just want to give an update on where we are and whether or not we're still receiving our funding from the state. How they plan on addressing the $19 million that they currently hold us.
Mr. Meeks, the $19 million is all from the last fiscal year?
No. Can you show that again, please? The $19
million. But it includes the MAP funds from this year?
The $15.8 represents what they owe us from last fiscal year.
Right.
The current MAP dollars for the current fiscal year, FY2012, that's what they owe us. Almost $4 million for the current year. And that's an ISAC and MAP dollars. Mm-hmm. And so the $15.8 represents what they owe us from the prior year, almost $16 million.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I feel like we've seen this a couple times, Glenn. So you have no reason to believe we won't continue to get paid by the state, right?
Yeah, if they continue at the rate that they're going, but I'd like some assurances. Yeah. you know, I like to talk to someone, put the schedule in front of them like we did before, you know, get the names of some people, talk to them, and let them know that we're watching this very closely and we're very concerned. Because traditionally, when you look at this institution, traditionally we run into problems in December. We haven't projected out to December, but we run into problems in December. I want to make sure that we don't run into problems in December. You know, we're going to provide for you our schedule of the payments, and we're going to be monitoring to make sure that you hit those reimbursements so that we don't run into a problem in December. It's usually in December, around the 1st of January. Traditionally, this institution has always run into problems around it because we run out of dollars. The state is slowing reimbursements. We're going to put that on the table. We'll be watching that very closely. Any other questions concerning the cash position? If not, I'd like to move to the action items. And for that, I've got one action item that I'm presenting this morning. The action item that I'm presenting has to do with a resolution for what we call for fees. These are not mandatory fees. These are some miscellaneous fees, lab fees. Now, one of the things that I want to point out is that in looking at the board regulations and in discussions with Irma Brooks Williams and also with our legal counsel concerning this, it noted. And I'll read this to you. I'll read the resolution to you, and I want to point out some things. It says, whereas Chicago State University Board of Trustees, the board, regulations revised December 6, 2000, Section 5, Administrative Affairs, Subsection I, Mandatory Fees, P94.1. It states, mandatory fees are defined as tuition and other fees established by the board, which all students are assessed as a prerequisite for registration unless a waiver or other exemption has been authorized by the board or by statute. Whereas the board approval shall be required to establish or change the amount of any mandatory fee. Whereas the Chicago State University policy on tuition and fee waiver guidelines has previously been approved by the Board of Trustees and internal policies and procedures have been established, and whereas the president, after review of available data provided by the University Tuition and Fee Committee, which is comprised of appropriate university personnel, and after consultation with the vice president, shall present recommendations concerning mandatory tuition and fee increases. The president shall take actions on the board's behalf as are necessary and appropriate to implement mandatory tuition and fee increases approved by the board. And therefore, be it resolved that the board approves the laboratory fees, class fees, and miscellaneous fees attached and made part of this resolution as Exhibit 1, Exhibit 2, and Exhibit 3, effective spring term 2012. So we're asking that this resolution be approved 2012. One of the things I want to point out here is this, is that these fees are not a prerequisite to registration. So technically, you know, my question was whether or not this even, you know, requires board approval. But we wanted to present this to the board for your approval in the guise of transparency, being and having opening governance. And so we wanted to present this because for some of you, this is probably the first time you've seen these fees and this fee schedule.
Did you get an opinion from internal counsel, Mr. Cage, regarding whether these fees would be considered mandatory and require board approval?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, and Mr. Cage, and then the resolution was prepared, so I'm not going to ask you what his opinion was.
Right. We wanted to present this to the board as open governance, as being transparent. We wanted to vet these fees the same way we would any other fee. To the students, knowing that they would affect the students. So we ran them through the tuition and fee committee. We had meetings, we discussed this, we got input from the deans, the colleges, we presented it, we had a meeting with the students, we presented it in front of the student leadership, and we also received their input as well. So we did vet this, and so that's why we're presenting this to you this morning. One of the things I'd like to do is to bring your attention, and I'm not going to go through each line item, but I would like to show you, but I would like to present this in exhibit format. The first exhibit, if you look at Exhibit 1 primarily is proposed increases in selected miscellaneous fees. This has to do with if somebody writes a bad check. You know, certain student fees that we have. There's fees in here concerning cap and gown fees, you know, for the students. Now, these are things that affect the students, and these will be charged. Now, again, it's not a prerequisite for registration, but again, in the guise of having opening governance and being transparent, we wanted to provide these fees because there's a proposal to increase them.
It's my understanding, Glenn, the increases are because we have not increased these fees much in the past, right? So much of this is catch up.
A lot of this is catch up. You know, some of these fees haven't been. I mean, we're looking at in some cases, you know, 5-10 years in some cases for these fees, and the costs have gone up. If you look at the cap and gown fees, traditionally, they've always been subsidized. There's always been an issue concerning where the additional dollars are coming from, and we also did a comparison. We compared these fees with other fees of other institutions. To see how they compare, and we're basically adjusting our fees accordingly to be in the ballpark and be consistent with other institutions as well on some of these fees. Okay? And so that's primarily what the Exhibit 1 is. It's primarily just a lot of miscellaneous fees, cap and gown, admission fees, CLEP exam fees, bad check fees, those kinds of things. Exhibit 2 has to do primarily with the College of Arts and Science. And we tried to keep the consistent format by showing, there's the course, current lab fee, what it currently is, what the new lab fee is, what the proposed lab fee is, and then explanation of why we're asking for an increase. And then they were able to provide us information in terms of when the last time the fee had been increased. Now you can see here, if you go through Exhibit 2, again, that's primarily for the College of Arts and Sciences. And there's a number of things that are in here. There's a number of increases that we're talking about doing. And some of you, again, I know are seeing this for the first time. But in the guise of transparency, we wanted to provide this information to the board for their approval, for your approval.
I think all of us must have received this as part of our board.
We got it
as part of our board badge.
So good.
We're not seeing it for the first time.
Oh, okay. Great. The last exhibit, Exhibit 3. Exhibit 3, the only increase that's on here is the one that's highlighted in red, if yours is in red. It's the second from the last. The student teaching application fee, they're increasing that. I believe that fee was, correct me if I'm wrong, $40? Was it $40? And they're asking for a $15 increase for the reason that's indicated here in red. The other fees are fees that have already been, in both of these situations, these fees have already been in place and been assessed students. And we're showing the other fees down here for the College of Education just for informational purposes to let you know that these fees are already in place. We're only increasing one. And so when you approve it, you're improving the increase and by exhibit, we're also approving the other fees that are down here as well. Because these fees are already in existence, they're already being assessed. Now we're ready to, are there any questions concerning the resolution?
I just wanted to make a comment that Mr. Meeks and Mr. Pinkleton did meet last week with some of the student leadership concerning these fees. We were informed, which I thought that was very gracious because he'd have to kind of include us in the process, but the tuition and fee committee does not currently have any student representation on it at all. And so we discussed about getting students on that committee, seeing that students will be under the brunt of the fee increases. And so I don't think personally students ever are in favor of fee increases, but I just want to make that known that they did come to us. But we did find out that on that tuition and fee committee, there are no student representation. We look forward to having a voice on that committee.
Right, we decided at that meeting that the next time the tuition and fee committee would meet, that we would include representation from the student leadership. And we felt, and we will still talk about preliminarily how that's going to be done. I suggested that the student leader, the organization, that they choose the person themselves, as opposed to us trying to select someone, that, you know, your leadership decides on who that would be. And of course, and as a trustee, student trustee, you're always welcome to sit in on those meetings as well.
So, I mean, I'm clear on the resolution itself. I'm just, what I'm not clear on is, if you don't need board approval, why we would sign this resolution?
Could be presented as an information item.
Right. I mean, we appreciate the information, and I applaud the governance process you went through to put together the fee increases. It is a good thing to include the university community in consideration of an issue like this.
Okay.
But, you know, in the absence of a requirement that the board resolve this issue, I don't see the need of passing a resolution.
Okay.
Yeah. Madam Chair, our effort was, one, to be transparent. Our second effort was to contextualize, and that is not to just give you a fee and not show you all the other fees that are already in existence. And that would be like blindsiding you. And then we realized that we're not asking for approval, but we're trying to just keep the board informed as to some of the things that we're doing, because there are ripple effects down the road, even though you didn't approve it.
You know, I, Mr. President, I actually agree that this is an issue that should be brought to the board, and I think it's appropriately here as a point of information.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
So noted. Well, then, that there's no more questions for me. There's no resolution that I have. There's no more action items that I have, and so I guess I'm done.
But thanks for your work, particularly during this time. We know you have some family concerns, so we appreciate
yes.
the diligence. And the board is squarely keeping you and your family in our prayers.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Clough.
Good morning, trustees.
Good morning, Ms. Davis.
Good morning.
For the record, my name is Kenneth Clough. I'm the Chief Internal Auditor.
And I'm Carla Davis, Compliance Specialist.
May I please turn your attention to the Internal Audit Board package here. We'll move right on to page 3. We'll start off with the fiscal year 2012 internal audit plan. That's the new plan for this current fiscal year. What I want to point out here is a couple of quick things that we have made some changes in regards to putting a little bit more emphasis on compliance issues. So we're going to be starting what we call statutory mandate audits, as well as CSU policy and procedures audits. These are going to be just a one-time, real quick audit. We'll pick a mandate, we'll pick a CSU policy, and then audit against that to see how we're doing in terms of our compliance efforts. And
is that a random?
It's going to be random. Well, partially. We've got some information from the externals in terms of what mandates they have currently looked at and what they're planning on looking at for this current audit. But going forward, we don't know what they're going to look at, so we're trying to be a little proactive from that stance. And also in the graphical analysis below that, I provide you with some information in regards to the percentage of time. When I basically put together the audit agenda for the current year, I look at the total personnel and how many hours we would have to be able to do audits in a year's time. What I've provided here is a graph in regards to the percentage of time allocated to the particular type of audit. So for example, on the left side, you see compliance, pure just a compliance audit. We are now emphasizing 45 to 46% of our time in regards to just compliant, whereas we've moved to only about 8 to 9% in regards to operational type audits.
What is the rest? Just the
The red is for fiscal year 2013, and the blue is for fiscal year 2012. We are required by the Fiscal Control and Internal Auditing Act to put a two-year plan together. So this is just giving you an overview of both years. Just some couple of other highlights. We've got some satisfactory academic performance policy audit that will be done this year as well. We'll be looking at some athletics, financial processes, and a couple of others. And I'd also like to go on page 4 to the fiscal year 2011 internal audit plan, and I'd like to direct you, please, to pages 8 through 12 of the package. This is going to provide you with an overview.
Excuse me, I have a question on
sure.
3. Under some bar graphs, you have compliance, financial, operational, but they're not 3 bars.
Well, what it is when
so I'm not clear.
Some audits have a component of all of it together. So, for example, we might take a process and we'll take a look at it from an operational standpoint. We'll look at some of the compliance mandates in regards to that particular audit, and then we'll look at the financial impact of that as well. So, what that is, it's comprising 3 different areas of the audit itself. Okay. So if I can please go to page 8 through 12. I just want to give you a quick overview of the results of the fiscal year 2011 internal audit plan that we conducted this past year. And I'd like to highlight the fact that we did complete 26 audits over the year. A number of those were special projects that were put on our plate through various conversations with CSU personnel. We have issued reports for almost all of them. A couple of them are currently in draft form right now in regards to just getting management responses, and we should have those issued relatively shortly. Also on pages 8 through 12 gives you an overview of all of the audits that were planned for the year, whether or not they were canceled, they were moved, or whether we actually completed them or not. And rather go through every single one of those. If you have any questions, I'll field that now for the fiscal year 2011 plan.
How does your 26 audits completed compare with the year before?
We're actually more than the year before. I think he had roughly about 18 or so in various different stages.
Okay.
If we'd go back to page 4, please. I'd like to go over the quality assurance review that we just went through. This was a requirement by the State Internal Audit Advisory Board as well as the Institute of Internal Auditors that we go through a quality assurance review every 5 years. I'm happy to note that we just got the State Internal Audit Advisory Board just approved our QAR and has finalized that. The memorandum has been sent out on September 20th, so we should be receiving that shortly. Throughout the university, so that's
the approval means that
we passed.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Also on page 4, I'd like to bring your attention to our student internship program, which we started this past year. We actually started it off with one woman who came in and did a fabulous job, and we now have 3 individuals that have come in, and I can't keep up with the people that want to come into our department right now. It's been a really good program, and we're getting great results, and the students that are coming in are doing a very good job, so I'd like to just point that out.
Okay. Good to hear.
And we're going to continue that practice going forward as well.
Is it like a work-study program?
It's a student internship program where...
it's a grade or a compensation?
They get compensation for it. They get paid on an hourly wage. But they also gain some really good internal audit background, and quite frankly, it helps them on their resume to be able to put that down and get internships in some of the big 4 and such like that. So, in fact, the first woman that came in did get an internship. I believe it was, I think, Deloitte and Touche.
KPMG.
KPMG, yes, Deborah Wilborn. So, yeah. Or was it E&Y? Oh, it was E&Y. Okay.
Great.
Yeah.
That's great.
I just want to thank you for doing that, given that students coming out of the universities now, employers want them to be already ready to go. So having that experience really helps our student body.
Thank you. Okay. The last thing that I'd like to go to before I turn this over to Carla is on pages 15 through the end of the report, is just an overview of our audit observations that we provided to the university over the past year. And without giving out any numbers or anything at this point, because you can see my graphs there, this is a requirement by the state that I have to provide to you a synopsis at the end of the fiscal year. All of the audit reports that were issued provide you with some information in regards to some of the audit findings and kind of what they are. So if there's any questions regarding that right now, I can field that now, or we can just move on to let Ms. Davis handle her compliance piece.
Any questions?
On that note.
Morning.
Morning. Morning.
I'm here to give a brief overview of the university's compliance program. I've been told to keep it to 2 minutes, so I'll try my best to keep it down. What we've been trying to do at CSU is implement a system-wide plan. The purpose of the compliance program is to make sure that we can monitor external and internal risks associated with regulatory fraud and acts of misconduct. Equally important is that the compliance program helps to maintain the integrity of the university and show that we have a real commitment to high standards. Now, the U.S. federal guidelines set forth what a compliance program should look like for you, for individuals as well as organizations, and those are bullet pointed on the board. There's seven basic requirements, and I'm sure we're going to go through them, but obviously we have a compliance officer, which is myself, as well as a compliance committee. We need written policies, which we have, and procedures to which the employees and the departments have to adhere to. There has to be a mechanism for reporting so that employees feel comfortable to be able to report irregularities or concerns that they have without fear of retaliation. We have to have effective training and education that goes beyond simply just reading a bunch of rules, but actually having some real comprehensive and substantive training. Obviously very critical to the process is to have an ability to audit and monitor these programs. And so I work with internal audit to help identify areas where I think that it would be helpful to be audited to make sure that our internal controls are intact. Along those lines, in order for the program to have teeth, we have to associate some kind of disciplinary sanction applied to individuals and departments who fail to comply or engage in some kinds of acts of misconduct and fraud. And ultimately, if we have any issues of concern that we need to address, we're taking a very proactive approach to putting together corrective action plans so that we can address any concerns or what we identify potential vulnerabilities in any of our programs. Now the benefits, there's obviously lots of benefits to having a compliance program. For the most part, it's twofold. One, it's obviously going to help maintain our reputation so that in the event that we have any issues, but it helps us maintain those standards of integrity and high standards that the university stands for. In addition to the fact that if there are any violations, if there are any issues, that they can be accompanied by severe criminal and civil penalties. So the existence of a truly strong compliance program is something that helps mitigate those damages in the event that a court has to review those issues. They then look to the strength of the compliance program and the commitment of the university to deal with those issues to help mitigate those damages. So it is very important that we have a strong program. Currently, to give you a current status of where we are now, the lion's share, obviously, still in my time, I'm 6 months in, is to monitor the external audit. It's pretty time consuming. Staff have been very good, very responsive. It's still my opinion that the auditors are pleased with the timeliness of the responses and the cooperation that they've received. I am currently in the process of trying to put together a compliance steering committee. I've touched bases with all the major heads and requested that they identify designees so that we can have this compliance committee. During the course of actually monitoring the audit, I have opportunities to actually sit down with various heads, and we talk about some of the policies that perhaps need some tweaking, or perhaps we may change them to make them a little less cumbersome. So we've been doing that review kind of as part of, during the course of maintaining the audit, we've been looking at those policies. We've also discussed what we need to do in terms of sanctions if someone is not following the policies, because obviously if someone is not doing that, that's a concern for us. I've had conversations with HR, who is in the process of rolling out a true training program, which would require each department, you know, for instance, financial aid or register to actually meet on a quarterly basis and go through and have sort of a roundtable discussion, and I would be part of that. In addition, we're going to also add a compliance piece to the employee orientation, because there are a lot of issues that aren't just departmental, but they cross the lines in terms of how things like timesheets and should be filled out. So those are some of the things that we're looking at. We have taken a very proactive approach in 2011 as well as 2012 in terms of helping as issues come up or potential issues come up. We've been looking at putting together corrective action plans now instead of waiting for a formal report. I'm also concerned with 2012, so that some of the things that I'm working on are designed not to address just the current audit, but to make sure that we can eradicate some of the issues that may come up in the 2012 audit. 2 minutes?
Thank you.
That's great.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. Especially given the fact that we didn't have a compliance person on board 6 months ago. We appreciate the speed with which you were working.
I like controls. That's good. Great.
I do too. I'm a big fan of controls.
Controlled internal. Well, that's where internal audit really helps me, because they help me identify what those internal controls should be.
That's fantastic.
And I applaud the president for bringing this position to the university.
Well, we are also expanding the office. And then also we have also now have the compliance office reporting to the legal office. And the reason why we've done that, because we're trying to make sure that there's a firewall.
Absolutely.
And because sometimes compliance gets involved in the actual, as some people say, they get down in the weeds. Mm-hmm. So the value of this office is absolutely, you know, for us to move forward, we must have compliance.
This will help you with your federal grants.
I forgot to mention that we have increased the department. The president has authorized an additional position for a compliance coordinator, which certainly has helped me. In addition to that, as you hear from Attorney Sonia Pedersen, that we will also, she's also hired a compliance person for athletics, which is a world unto itself. As well as Dr. Harris is also in the process of looking for a compliance person for sponsored programs, because that's, again, a very complex area that could use a compliance person within itself. So hopefully those persons will ultimately be working on the compliance steering committee as well.
Right. Those four individuals will be working in a coordinated way, and there will be some dotted lines, you know, straight lines reporting, but also some dotted lines. So Carla's life is going to become a little bit more complicated.
Thank you.
That's good.
In a good way.
Thank you.
Monique Horton, Assistant Director of Physical Facilities. I have with me Ed Malacker. He is the Assistant Chief Engineer for the physical plant. We're here today to talk about the energy savings. It was relayed to us that we were to provide a report to the legislators, and due to that request, we are bringing this in front of you as well for your information. We believe that it's also good information for all to know. Ed Malacker, he is the author of this report, and he also monitors and is directly involved in the purchases for utilities on campus. There are certain points in the report that you have already received. They include 9 energy conservation measures over the fiscal years of FY11 and FY12. They include everything from the Siemens infrastructure project, which handles our building automation systems, to lighting upgrades and lighting controls, to our demand response program, what we're doing for power and generation and fuel technology, to look at that in the future. Also some things that were done on campus, which include the oxygen analyzer system, the heating system with the isolation of our valve and repairs, the heating system and pneumatic valve upgrades, as well as things that we've been doing to upgrade the heating and cooling water system on campus. All of these things are very detailed in the report. Some of the bottom lines are that there have been a number of savings to the university based on the conservation measures, as well as a reduction in consumption. One of those major reductions is in the water, as well as we have had some waivers from the city, which have resulted in over $400,000, maybe $500,000, which we now do not have to pay. If there are any questions specifically related to the point, Ed Blacker can address those at this time.
What legislative committee requested the information, the energy savings?
So we were requested through Dr. Brooks Williams, so I will let her expound on that.
That legislative committee, Representative Chapin Rose is on that committee. It's the Higher Education Committee, as well as Appropriations. So it's a state, it's now a state mandate that universities provide a report to the General Assembly on energy savings.
Was that the House?
The House.
Yearly?
It's my understanding annually, yes.
Okay. So that goes on the state mandate.
Right.
Okay. I don't have any questions.
I know, and it's a great summary.